From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch. Now, here's your host, Weekend Edition producer, David Salkeld.
Hello and welcome to Washington Watch Live. I'm David Salkeld, host of the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, and I'm sitting in for Tony Perkins as he and his family take some much-deserved time off. And you can keep up with everything we do here at the Family Research Council over at TonyPerkins.com. Also, this is it, the last day of 2018. And if you're looking for someplace to make a last-minute contribution, let me suggest Family Research Council. Your financial support helps keep this program on the air. So if you can help us out financially, just click on the donate button when you're at TonyPerkins.com. Or give us a call at 800-225-4008. Also, let me remind you of a couple of things that we've got going on here at Family Research Council that I think you're going to want to participate in. First is our Stand app. It's our way of staying in touch with you on the important issues facing the nation, and it's your way of staying in touch with your representatives in Washington, D.C. on the issues that matter the most to you. You can check it out at your app store. The second item is our Stand membership. You know, Tony encourages you daily to take a stand for your beliefs. And in that spirit, we're asking you to take a stand with us financially. And when you become a Stand member, you'll receive benefits like a copy of Tony's book, No Fear, quarterly devotionals, and even the Standing in Faith monthly teachings by Tony. You can find out more about both of these at TonyPerkins.com. We've spent some time over the last few days sharing some of what we consider the best of 2018, segments of this show from the past year that exemplify the type of topics we cover and the kind of people we talk to. And we continue our best of 2018 today. A little later on in the show, we'll be hearing from one of the true champions of religious freedom around the world, former Congressman Frank Wolf. Also, Senator James Lankford joins us to talk about religious freedom as foreign policy. But first, in April of this year, President Trump started talking about pulling all of our troops out of Syria who are there supporting the effort against ISIS. As of yet, he has not been able to do it with Russian troops and Iranian troops still in Syria. Joining Tony to talk about the possibilities is South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham.
Senator Graham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. It's a lot of heavy stuff going on in the world.
Well, it's just as dangerous as when we spoke last time, and I heard as you were talking about this issue, and you said that pulling American troops out of Syria and leaving it to the Russians and Iranians would be the biggest mistake of the Trump presidency.
Yeah, and hats off to President Trump for allowing our military to go after ISIS. We've pretty much destroyed them in Iraq. We got them on the run in Syria. Raqqa has fallen. There's still over 3,000 ISIS fighters roaming around Syria. We have about 2,000 American troops helping the Arabs and the Kurds destroy what's left of ISIS. If we left now, I think the conditions for an ISIS comeback would be great. We got them on the ropes. Let's pour on the gas here and keep our eyes on the prize, which is to destroy ISIS.
What effect would a pullout now have, not only on ISIS, but Syria in particular?
Okay. This is a really good question. I know the people listening to this podcast are big supporters of Israel. So am I. So Western Syria is under the control of Assad, who's a puppet of the Iranians. A proxy of the Iranians and a puppet of the Russians. Israel has had to bomb several times inside Syria. As Iranian bases are beginning to form, and Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. And if we left, and the vacuum would be filled by Russia and Iran, you'd be giving Syria to the Iranians, which is a nightmare for Israel, because the corridor between Beirut and Damascus is a flow of arms to benefit Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. So if we left, ISIS would come back. Russia and Iran would dominate Syria. It would be a nightmare for friends in Israel. And Turkey would probably go full-scale on in a war with the Kurds. Other than that, it'd be a good idea to leave.
Well, I think people need to realize the Shiite Muslims that are aligned with Iran are the Iranians.
The most important thing about Syria, just what you said.
And so they're in the minority, but they're trying to dominate, and there's a lot of concern I mean, I've been reading where Iran is basically going in. I mean, they're, of course, we bolstered them with the Iranian nuclear deal, giving up assets, which they're using to prop up Syria, because Syria is in trouble. It's a war-torn country. Their humanitarian needs are great, and they don't have, I mean, their economy's devastated. And so Iran is propping them up. And so Iran really does have a firm grip on Syria. And if, as you suggest, if we pull out, we leave it to the Russians and to the Iranians.
Well, I just got back from Israel. So we went up on the Golan Heights, and the border with Israel and Syria, there were three towns on the border. One was in the hands of the rebels. One was in the hands of Assad forces with a Hezbollah element. And one was in the hands of ISIS about 20 miles down the road. So Israel is getting pressure on the Syrian border. But right. Lebanon, southern Lebanon, there's 160,000 rockets and missiles pointed at Israel, provided to Hezbollah by the Iranians. If the Iranians control Syria more than they are today, it allows a corridor all the way from Tehran down to Beirut.
Correct.
And that's a nightmare for Iraq. It's a nightmare for Israel. It's probably the end of Lebanon. With 2,000 troops helping the Arabs and the Kurds, we virtually destroyed ISIS. Our goal is to allow people to go back to Syria, build up the forces on the ground that would push back against Assad and Iran, help them, then try to negotiate a peace agreement that does not give Syria to Iran. That's the goal. And if we withdraw these forces, we can't accomplish that goal, and we'll put Israel in a very bad spot.
So, Senator Graham, have you discussed this with the president?
At length, and hats off to the president for going after ISIS. He's probably going to pull out of the Iranian nuclear agreement, which is long overdue. This is one of the worst agreements since the deal with Hitler. They get like $150 billion. 15 years from now, all the inspection regimes collapse. They don't even have to cheat to get a nuclear weapon. The Arabs are probably going to get one of their own. So President Trump wants to change the deal so that Iran doesn't have the potential to get a nuclear weapon down the road. He also wants to check Iranian influence in Yemen, in Syria, in Lebanon, and Iraq. And the center of gravity now is Syria. If we can destroy ISIS and allow the Arabs and Kurds to regroup and push back against Assad and Iran, we can get a settlement in Syria that would be good for the entire region. But Iran is on the march. They destabilized four Arab countries, and we're about to have a full-scale Sunni-Shia war if something doesn't change.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, my guest. So, Senator, the question is, where's the president getting his advice on this?
Well,
because the Middle East is a tricky place. I mean, you see what's happened under the last 8 years, under the last administration, what's happened there. This place is just in complete upheaval.
Well, but when things are complicated, you try to make them simple. Pulling out in Iraq was a nightmare. Obama was told to leave some troops behind. 10,000 would have kept it together. He basically overrode his commander's advice. ISIS started in Iraq, then they spread to Syria. So every time we left Libya against sound military advice. So the president, to his credit, has followed military advice. He's taken the gloves off. This statement a couple of days ago really bothered me. I hope he'll continue to let General Mattis and General Dunford conduct military operations, giving us the best chance to destroy ISIS and contain Iran. I think he will. He's going to withdraw from the Iranian nuclear agreement in May, if we can't get a better deal, and I don't blame him. Also in May, he's going to sit down with North Korea and try to end one of the biggest threats to world order, the North Korean nuclear program. He has done a lot to roll back ISIS. He has stood up to the Iranians, and he has finally got Kim Jong-un at the table. If he goes weak on Syria, I think he will undercut everything he's done.
Well, you mentioned Kim Jong-un in North Korea. I mean, I would have to say that this president in the first 14 months has done more to protect American security than we saw in the last 8 years combined. In fact, he's moving the opposite direction of the previous administration.
Amen. I couldn't. And so he's got two real hard decisions to make. What do you do about an Iranian regime that's on the march, that's turning the Mideast upside down? I think the first thing you do is you change the worst agreement since the 30s by getting out of this deal or making it better. The second big threat to world order is North Korea with an ICBM that can hit America with a nuclear weapon on top. They will sell whatever they build. My big fear is if they don't use it, they'll give it to somebody who will. So the president's drawn a red line. He's told Kim Jong-un, I'll never allow you to hit America with a nuclear weapon. So now we're coming to a decisive moment. The maximum pressure campaign of President Trump, the fire and fury message, has worked. The North Korean leader is meeting with President Trump because the sanctions are hurting, and he really believes Trump would use force if he had to. So in May, we could have two of the biggest decisions any president's going to make in my lifetime, how to contain the Iranian nuclear threat and try to get North Korea to give up their nuclear weapons. I give President Trump full credit for getting North Korea at the table. Now's the time to close the deal.
So the best outcome, Senator Graham, when President Trump meets with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, what's the best outcome?
Is to have a small, short meeting where you tell Kim Jong-un it will be the policy of the United States to never allow you, Kim Jong-un, to hit America with a nuclear weapon. Your missile program is a national security threat that's unacceptable. We don't want a war. We're not here to change your regime. We're not here to bring democracy to North Korea or to unify South Korea and North Korea. You have to give up your nuclear weapons. Japan and South Korea, they don't have nukes, and you need to denuclearize, give up your nukes. And here's what I would offer North Korea. If they would give up their nuclear program, I would offer them a peace treaty to end the Korean War, which is still has never been ended. We're in a state of armistice.
Right.
And have North Korea, South Korea, China, and the United States sign a peace treaty after North Korea gives up their nukes. That would be the best possible outcome.
That's pretty big, as you said,
That's
of the biggest
huge,
decisions.
But Trump is a big-thinking guy. Everybody before him screwed this up. Every Republican and every Democrat allowed North Korea to play him for a fool. And one word of advice, I know we got to go here. The worst thing Kim Jong-un can do, is meet with President Trump in person and try to play him. Because if you do that with Trump, that will be the end of the North Korean regime.
I think you're right, and I think he probably knows that. I think he realizes.
I think he knows that, and I think more importantly, China knows that.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Senator Graham, as always, great to visit with you. Thank you for your insights. And I just before we go, we're up against a break, but I know that key to all of this is having a military that can back up the president. And I know as a military veteran, you see our armed forces are now being rebuilt as a result of the cuts that we've sustained.
That was great news, and this is the Reagan model. You know, say what you mean what you say, and be able to do something about it.
All right. Senator Lindsey Graham, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're listening to a special Best of 2018 edition of Washington Watch Live. You can find out more about Lindsey Graham when you head over to tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the donate button. Today is your last chance to donate in 2018, and we need your help to finish strong. Your financial support keeps efforts like this radio program going. So head over to tonyperkins.com and click on the donate button. When we come back, former Congressman Frank Wolf with a look at international religious freedom. We'll be back with more of the best of Washington Watch Live right after this.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Together, we will work to ensure religious liberty for all Americans is upheld, unborn babies in the womb are protected, and biblical values are honored in our country. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled by a generous challenge match. Any donation is tax deductible. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008. Or visit frc.org/2018 to donate. Again, that number is 1-800-225-4008 and frc.org/2018. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
We're inviting you to join other like-minded people and become a Stan member. We want to build stronger relationships with listeners like you and provide resources to strengthen your faith and equip you to stand for the values that matter to you of life, marriage, and religious freedom. By joining this growing network of engaged believers, you'll receive a copy of Tony Perkins' book, No Fear, detailing courageous Christians standing for truth. And for a limited time this month, we will also send you a copy of Pastor Carter Conlon's book, It's Time to Pray, that illustrates how God's power can change everything. Take action today and become an FRC Stan member for $17 a month. That's just 56 cents a day. To join, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. That's 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. Thank you for partnering with us. The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to this special best of 2018 edition of Washington Watch Live. I'm David Salkeld, host of the weekend edition of Washington Watch, sitting in for Tony Perkins as we highlight some of the best interviews from the past year of Washington Watch Live programs. And you need to know that you make this program possible through your prayer and your financial support. And you can join our team of supporters by going to TonyPerkins.com, or you can give us a call at 800-225-4008. Back on May 15th, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced the appointment of Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom as its newest commissioner. Joining Tony to talk about the importance of the commission is a former congressman who spearheaded the original legislation that resulted in this commission, Congressman Frank Wolf.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that he had appointed me to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom as its newest commissioner for a two-year term. I'm certainly honored to have this opportunity to advocate for, identify areas of concern when it comes to religious freedom. As you've heard me talk about many, many times, religious freedom is fundamental to bringing stability to society. But the vision of this began two decades ago in the United States Congress when the International Religious Freedom Act was passed back in 1998, and it was authored by former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, and he joins us now. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us here today on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to be with you. Thank you very much.
Well, privileged to have the opportunity to serve on the commission that was created by the law that you spearheaded back in 1998. And I want to take a little bit of time to talk about the vision for that, why that law was brought forth, passed out of both houses, signed by President Bill Clinton. What was the motivator 20 years ago to bring this to the forefront of discussion in the Congress?
Well, several things. President Reagan, and I got elected because of Reagan. I lost two times. And Reagan kind of pulled me across the finish line. President Reagan said that the words in the Constitution and the words in the Declaration of Independence were a covenant, not only with the people in Philadelphia, you know, in 1776 and 1787 when the Constitution was ratified, but a covenant with the entire world. And Reagan sort of was the beginning. The other thing, many of the Jewish groups really did a great job, if you remember Jackson Vanik, with regard to immigration. They spoke out, and they pushed and pushed and pushed. Then I took a trip. I took a trip to Ethiopia during the famine in 1984. And, you know, you had the communist government, Mengistu, and we saw people die. I got waylaid in a camp up in Alamata, a camp run by World Vision, and on one side was Mother Teresa's camp. That was a life-changing experience. Then in 85, I went to Romania with former Congressman Tony Hall, and we saw people who were persecuted. We talked to people who told us their husband was in jail, their son was in jail, and that was sort of the Ceausescu. It was darker in Bucharest than any place around the world. And we came back and put in the bill to pass, take away MFN, and Ronald Reagan, God bless him, read the book by Pacheco, who defected. He was head of their Securitate. And Reagan, on his own, we had passed it. We're getting fights by the business community. Reagan took it away. And so I sort of came out of that. And then Chris Smith and I went to China in the early 90s. We visited the last gulag, the Perm Camp 35, interviewed Sharansky's cellmate. And so it kind of came out of that. And then lastly, you had people, giants like Chuck Colson. Chuck was just, this is an important issue. You had Don Argue from the National Association of Evangelicals. And there was a gathering in the Mayflower in 1997, I guess it was. You had Chuck Colson, Cardinal McCarrick, Richard Land, Don Argue, and they all came together, and Michael Horowitz, I don't know if you know Michael, but he was one of the ones that helped draft this, and it all kind of came together. And then, this was during the Clinton administration, you may or may not recall, but the Clinton administration opposed the bill, and Secretary of State gave a statement against it. Madeleine Albright gave a speech at a Catholic university against it. The business community came out against it. Some of the human rights groups came out against it. Some of the church groups, I think the National Council of Churches, opposed it. So we passed it in the House, got it over in the Senate, and on the last day, it was being blocked. And Dan Coats was in my freshman class as a freshman member. He's now director of national intelligence. He saved the bill and got it over, and we stayed that evening as unanimous consent, took the Senate language, and we passed it. But the business community was very much against it. So I guess the origin, I give the credit to Ronald Reagan. I would give the credit to some of the giants in the House, guys like Henry Hyde and Jack Kemp. I give the credit to the Jewish community. I learned a lot from the Jewish community. I mean, they really advocated for their people. Then I give a lot of credit to people like Chuck Colson and Don Argue and Richard Land and Nina Shea. I don't know if you know Nina, but you ought to sit down with Nina because she has been a giant on this. And so I think that's sort of the background of how it came about. But if you may or not remember, usually when a bill passes, there's a signing ceremony. The Clinton White House never even had a signing ceremony.
Congressman Wolf, we're up against a break. I'll ask you to hold on. We're going to come back to this because I want to get your thoughts on, you know, where are we 20 years later? Have we seen this law come into its maturity? Has it really been utilized as it was envisioned? And what's next? What's on the horizon for religious freedom globally? What will it take to give everybody that freedom that we've recognized, even the United Nations has recognized, is a fundamental human right, the freedom of religion? Folks, we continue our conversation with former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf when we return. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come, along with your phone calls here on this Wednesday afternoon.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a Christian worldview. Together, we will work to ensure religious liberty for all Americans is upheld, unborn babies in the womb are protected, and biblical values are honored in our country. Your giving can make an eternal difference for your community and for future generations. And if you give between now and December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled by a generous challenge match. Any donation is tax deductible. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018 to donate. Again, that number is 1-800-225-4008 and frc.org/2018. Thank you for standing with us. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to a special Best of 2018 edition of Washington Watch Live, recorded earlier this year.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. My guest, former Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf, discussing the International Religious Freedom Act, which created the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. So we're 20 years into the law, the commission, the ambassador at large for religious freedom, which the act created. Is it functioning as it was envisioned? Are we seeing religious freedom protected, or has it been underutilized as a tool to promote religious freedom?
I think it's been underutilized. Let me just say, I am so grateful for Senator McConnell appointing you. I think you can, I've always said personnel is policy. You put the right people in, and you can, with the right, you can make things happen. And it's, what you've done with Miriam Abraham, I was at that event, I remember, about 2 or 3 years ago, and I know you really care. So you can make a tremendous difference. The needs are so great. China, Catholics are being persecuted, Protestants are being persecuted, Uyghur children are being taken away, put into detention camps. Pakistan, Christian woman Asia Bibi's been in jail for 8 years under a blasphemy conviction for taking a drink of water out of a cup. So there's so much that you can do. Also, you're with an organization. You care, your organization cares, so you have a bigger voice than perhaps anybody else. I mean, you can really do a big difference. There are tremendous needs. Training the State Department employees. The law calls for it, but you should make sure that they're training. Everyone who goes abroad ought to go through the State Department training. You ought to look at the curriculum, make sure what the curriculum says, make sure it's really strong in defending people of all faiths. You got a great opportunity, Tony, because you got an ambassador for religious freedom, Ambassador Brown, but he's as good as you could ever want. Trump, yeah. Pence are good. I mean, the vice president's speech that he gave before the IDC in defense of Christians, great. You got a great Secretary of State. So you guys are really poised to do a lot of good work. Secondly, prisoners of conscience. In the old days, we had prisoners of conscience on the Hill. Congress would adopt somebody who was in prison, and you would write to them, you would write to the families. To take that prisoner conscience program and take it into the college campuses, to the millennials, to the Generation Z, have churches adopt a prisoner of conscience. Maybe somebody's in China persecuted for their faith. Write letters to the prison. Write letters to the government. Write letters to the embassy. Maybe even picket an embassy once or twice. But that prisoner of conscience. Thirdly, make your reports more readable and have good public relations. So when they're announced, you get a commissioner to actually announce it, not just put out a piece of paper, but stand before the press and say, today we have done this, and this is the reason why. Public hearings outside of Washington, great to have them in Washington, but take it on the road. Next, build up public support, maybe even have once a month or once every 2 months, almost an open mic program where any of the groups can come in and say whatever they want to say to tell you what's going on. I mean, the Rohingya out in Myanmar, it's genocide. And lastly, work with the diaspora. I mean, in Nigeria, 21,000 Christians have been killed in Nigeria, 900 churches destroyed, 3 Catholic priests killed about 2.5 weeks ago, Boko Haram running rampant through the country with the Fulani militants. Work with the diaspora. There are 360,000 Nigerian Americans living in this country. There's 60,000 in Texas. Have a field here in Texas. Invite them to come in. There are more Iraqi Christians in Illinois than there are in Iraq. Deal with the diaspora, the Iraqi Christians. I think you guys, with the people that are filling these spots, and with your appointment, I hope the next couple are as good as you are that are waiting to come out. I think you guys can shake this thing up. And you're not afraid to speak out. I mean, you will say whatever you think. And this is the Lord's work. What they're doing to Tibetan Buddhists is, I mean, they've turned Lhasa into a dirty Chinese city. I mean, they're stripping 140 Tibetan monks and nuns and poured kerosene on their bodies in protest of the Chinese government. Did you see the story the other day? A guy that works for Marriott, 50 years old, does a little tweet about China and to Tibet. Marriott fired him. Nobody's saying anything about the guy. So I think you guys are poised with this commission, with you and people like you, with Ambassador Brownback, with Secretary of State Pompeo, and with the Trump-Pence people. I think you guys can shake this thing up and really make a big difference.
And it will have so many byproducts to religious freedom. I mean, from a national security standpoint, from an economic standpoint, but of course, fundamentally, it's a human right issue of that freedom to choose. Congressman, we're again up against a break, but I want to thank you for your vision and for your continued dogged determination to protect to speak for the voiceless and protect those in minority statuses around the world. So we are grateful for the leadership you've provided.
Thank you, and thank FRC. You guys do a great job.
You're listening to a special Best of 2018 edition of Washington Watch Live. You can find out more about Frank Wolf when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the Donate button. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Senator James Lankford shares his thoughts on using religious freedom as part of our foreign policy. We'll be back with more of the Best of Washington Watch Live right after this.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom. Together, we will work to protect life, marriage, and religious liberty in our country. If you give before December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Don't miss your opportunity to join other like-minded people and become an FRC STAN member. Join today and you'll receive empowering resources like Tony Perkins' book, No Fear, and for a limited time, Pastor Carter Conlon's book, It's Time to Pray. So become an FRC STAN member for $17 a month. That's just 56 cents a day. To join, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. Thank you for partnering with us for the sake of America.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld, host of the weekend edition of Washington Watch, sitting in for Tony Perkins as we bring you a special Best of 2018 edition of Washington Watch Live, recorded earlier this year. Don't forget, you can learn more about all of our guests as well as donate to the Ministry of Family Research Council when you head over to TonyPerkins.com. April 18th marked the 70th anniversary of Israel's nationhood, but it also marked another important date, the 20th anniversary of the passage of the International Religious Freedom Act. Back in April, during FRC's tour to the Holy Land, FRC President Tony Perkins spoke with a longtime friend of Family Research Council, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, about the International Religious Freedom Act.
Now that act was passed and actually signed into law on October 27, 1998 by President Bill Clinton. And it did a number of things, one of which was created the Ambassador-at-Large for International Religious Freedom within the Department of State. And in fact, yesterday on the program, we had the Ambassador-at-Large for Religious Freedom, Sam Brown, back on the program from Turkey talking about Pastor Andrew Brunson. This also made religious freedom a priority in our foreign policy, United States. Now that we've gotten away from that, but there is some hope that now we're going to see a return in our foreign policy to promoting this. And why is that? Why is religious freedom important? Well, joining us now to talk about it, Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma. He serves on the Senate Committee on Appropriations and the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs and the Select Committee on Intelligence. Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, absolutely great to be with you again.
Well, thank you. And it's good to hear your voice. And let's talk about this issue today. I know you, you're making remarks regarding the 20th anniversary. Why is it important from a policy standpoint as a nation that we focus on religious freedom in our foreign policy?
You know, we take for granted religious freedom in the United States, but we forget what a revolution that really was in the founding of our nation. Most countries around the world at that point, 240 years ago, did not believe this would ever work. You had to have the monarch or the leader dictate to the population what the faith would be, because they assumed that if people had multiple faiths, you'd have division in the country, and you'd have wars and riots, and so you had to suppress that. We had this incredible democracy that was created, this representative republic that anchored on not establishing a religion, but also allowing individuals to live their faith, to not just have a faith, but to be able to choose their faith and to live their faith as they choose. That experiment it continues to blossom here in the United States, and we find great peace in countries that are following our example. There are countries around the world that never thought it would work, that now they are doing it in their own constitutions over the last two centuries, and we want to continue to press that. We don't end up at war with countries that have religious liberty because they end up having peace in their own country and peace with their neighbors.
I think that's an extremely important point that we cannot make enough, and I've talked about that many times on the program here, that there's a reason that we would promote it is because it does bring about greater social stability, economic stability in a country, making it much less likely that that's going to be a country we have to square off with militarily.
Right. Yeah, if you have greater economic ability, obviously that's a better trading partner for us economically. If you have greater stability within the country and less conflict, we don't end up at war with them or in the region. And quite frankly, just a basic human dignity. We have all understood, and in fact that's part of the International Religious Freedom Act, is understanding that it is a human right and a human fundamental freedom for individuals to be able to choose their own faith. So we want to just be able to have that as a basic human right. We're passionate people, and we're compassionate people, and basic compassion says don't force someone to believe something they do not believe. That's never going to work, and it'll only lead to conflict.
Well, and Senator Lankford, this is not like this is just something that the United States has come up with. I mean, this goes back to the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights from the United Nations, of which the United States was a driver of. But right. In that, it states that religious freedom is a key freedom, the ability to choose one's religion or not to choose one, to change it or whatever. And that is really the principle that we work on. This is not forcing a brand of religion. It's not trying to Christianize the world, but it is to open the door for people to be able to share their faith, live their faith. And of course, it starts at home. We saw that neglected in the last 8 years. And of course, as a result, it was neglected in our foreign policy. Are you hopeful now, especially in light of yesterday, even having the ambassador at large in Turkey for the hearing of Pastor Brunson? Are you optimistic that America is going to return to this focus on religious freedom?
I am, obviously. And it is an area that you have brought up multiple times that I do want to reiterate to people. We are our best example when we're actually living it out ourselves. Now, when other countries see us limiting religion, they would say, aha, see, I told you, you need to be able to limit religion. When we actually demonstrate what we say we believe and actually live out those principles, we can then go be able to push that in other areas. There are many countries around the world that have in their constitution religious liberty, but they actually have blasphemy laws in their country, right, where they prohibit people from changing religion, and they keep people into a certain system of belief or to be able to lock them in. That's not freedom of religion. So when we live it and we allow people to be able to practice their faith here of whatever that faith may be, or to choose to have no faith, we then have a better platform to be able to push that around the world. And in countries like Turkey that you've mentioned, Turkey, for the past several decades, has been a place where it has allowed religious liberty and has allowed that kind of freedom. And now there's a major transition happening in Turkey where they're clamping down on people that disagree with them, either politically or their faith. And they're putting people in prison like Andrew Brunson simply because he has a faith that they want to be able to challenge, and trying to lock him away. That's what's happening in Russia with a Jehovah's Witness. That's what we're seeing in Iraq. That's what we're seeing in Turkey. That's what we're seeing in areas in India. This is the world going the wrong direction. As the United States was going the wrong direction for 8 years, the world is following that. We need to be able to make sure we're going the right way to be able to help protect people.
And I know you were in Turkey about a year ago, and this is a passion of yours, the issue of religious freedom. Do you see this affecting the long-term relationship with Turkey? Turkey, a NATO ally, but it's hard to be allies with nations that reject such fundamental human freedoms.
It It is, actually. And again, Turkey has been a NATO ally. They've been a close partner in the region. We have a lot of economic ties to them. But you look at Turkey 3 years ago versus Turkey now, and you see the dramatic difference. I discourage people from going to do business in Turkey or vacationing or doing tourist actions in Turkey now, because we have an individual like Andrew Brunson who had no crime, who was just swept up and has trumped up charges, and he's been in prison for 18 months. I would never want to have a situation where I'm an employer that I don't know if my employees are going to just be swept up on trumped up charges simply because they choose to do it that day. So it's a very destabilizing situation. And again, the difficulty is, if you talk to Turks a few years ago, they were very proud of the openness of their country and how they honored religious liberty, and they had great diversity there, and they saw themselves as a secular democracy. And that has changed pretty dramatically in the last few years.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host. Glad to have you with us. My guest is a senator from the state of Oklahoma, James Lankford. Senator, we've traveled together to Israel. That's where we are right now. And Israel being one of those few countries in the Middle East that truly respects religious freedom here. And within this country, you have a great diversity of religions and participation in those religions. But there's some other changes that are taking place, and I think Egypt holds some promise for Muslim-dominated countries to begin embracing a form of religious freedom, certainly not what we would fully appreciate in the United States. But there is some movement, and I think America has a role to play in this, and the International Religious Freedom Act is a key part of that.
It is, actually. Ambassador Sam Brownback, as he travels around the world helping promote this basic human dignity, what he's actually doing is trying to lift up the people of those countries. And I say, we're not asking you to be Americans or to be in a government situation or a political environment like America, but let's all agree that we should honor the individual rights of each person. Whether you're talking about Thomas Jefferson and talking about trying to compel someone to be able to act contrary to their own faith or to be able to compel them into a certain faith, that violates just basic human dignity. So the work that Sam Brownback has as he travels around the world and works with the region is extremely important. And you and I have been in Israel together. I wish I was back with you there right now again, but I'm stuck in Washington, D.C., rather than enjoying all the things that are in Israel there. But for Israel in particular, they have protected religious liberty, and they allow Muslims, they allow Jews, they allow Christians, they allow Yazidis, they allow a wide variety of faiths to be able to flourish in religious liberty in Israel. And just north of them in Lebanon, they have constitutional protections to try to protect various faiths that are there, but they continue to struggle as a government to be able to honor all groups of faith and to make sure everyone is protected. But it's important in the region to be able to see that spread into Egypt, into Jordan, into other areas, where people can just honor that basic human right.
And the more America provides leadership in drawing attention to this, to saying this is important, it's a priority for us, I think the more these countries will embrace it as well. Senator, I want to shift gears for just a moment. Senator Lankford, we're finding out that Mike Pompeo, CIA director, nominee for Secretary of State, that vote coming up in just a couple weeks to confirm him. So two questions, really. One, first, about a report of a meeting in North Korea over Easter weekend with him meeting with Kim Jong-un, essentially setting up this historic meeting between the North Korean dictator and President Trump. What do we know about that?
You know, very little has been released on that at this point. I think it's a wise pick for the president to be able to tap Mike Pompeo to do the advance work. There's no question before two heads of state meet, you always have lower-level cabinet officials or leadership that will actually do the pre-meetings and will be able to walk through the details. President Trump, when he picked Mike Pompeo, I think is a very good pick. He's currently the head of the CIA. He's very well informed of what's happening on the world stage, and he's transitioning into being our Secretary of State. He has a solid faith perspective himself, is very well grounded in who he is right. Personally, but is also very knowledgeable, both in his background in the military and his background in Congress, and now obviously leading the CIA. So it'll be important to be able to get him into that role. We don't want to have a drift in the State Department. We do need to be able to maintain good leadership there, because there's a great deal that needs to be done, and quite frankly, a lot of positions that are currently open around the world for ambassador positions. We need to be able to get those filled with good folks and to be able to continue the diplomatic work that's so important, especially in the region in and around North Korea.
So, Senator Langford, that was my second question on that topic, was what are the prospects? Is it looking favorable for Mike Pompeo to be confirmed by the Senate?
I think it is favorable. He will go through the committee process and the committee vote. He had a fairly contentious hearing, which seems to be the theme in Washington, D.C. of late. But quite a few members may say a political statement about him, or may take any statement that he's made at any point and pull it out of context. But when you look at the body of work of what Mike Pompeo has done, he's proven to be a very solid, thoughtful leader. And I think would do a good job. I think he did a very good job at CIA. I think he'll do a good job at the State Department.
Senator, let me ask you, we're talking about nominations, and there are people across the country frustrated with the fact that President Clinton has not been able to get his nominees confirmed. In fact, I was in the White House just a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about all of those individuals that the president has nominated. It'll take 2023 before they're all through the system. And you have a proposal to fix that.
I do, actually. President Trump should be able to get his own staff, as any other president has done in the past. When a president comes into office and they're elected, they should be able to bring their own team. Democrats can't stop it on the vote. What they can do, though, is the minority has always had the right to be able to request 30 hours of debate, of additional debate, for any nominee. Now, typically, that's been used on really controversial people. To give you, for instance, from the time of President Reagan all the way through President Obama, that's only been requested 15 times total for that extra 30 hours of debate for anyone in their first term. So that's when most of the nominees are moving through. It's only 15 times total. Now for President Trump, in the past year and a half, it's been requested 80 times. And now you can say, what difference does that make? Well, the difference is if you ask for 30 hours of debate, that kills a full day on the floor of the Senate where you can't do legislation, you can't do anything else. And for many of these individuals, they're not even debating. They pass near unanimous. There may be 5 or 10 minutes of debate, and the rest of the time the floor is just empty. So what I'm trying to do is to say we've got to fix the process in the Senate, not just for President Trump, but for every future president. Because quite frankly, when there's the next Democrat president, whenever that may be, I can assure you Republicans are going to say we need to do the same thing to them that they did to us, and to be able to prevent them from getting a staff. And that would only be right to be able to walk through this process. So we've got to be able to fix this. So my focus is let's limit the amount of time. Let's actually make sure that we're enforcing the time that if you're not on the floor debating, we actually call the question and actually hold the vote right then. But we should be able to push this along and have a limited amount of time for debate. So once they've gone through committee and they're coming to the floor, there's no reason to have endless debate at that point. We're going to try to fix this.
Well, I think that's a great proposal. How can people weigh in to help you with that?
Well, we actually brought it to the Rules Committee last December and had extended debate there. It's coming to the floor of the Rules Committee here within the next week to be able to continue debate again, and then we'll bring it to the floor of the full Senate to be able to bring it up. The senators determine the rules of the Senate. So you hear people all the time saying, well, that's the rules that can't be changed. That's not true. The rules of the Senate are determined by the senators themselves, so it's time to get this changed.
All right. All right, Senator James Lankford, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll encourage people to weigh in on that. Folks, we're out of time for today. I want to thank you for joining us. We'll be back with more from the Holy Land. Until next time, I encourage you to adhere to the words of the Apostle Paul. You've done everything you can do. When you've taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported.
For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.